Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This is a WTOP original podcast.
Coming up in this episode of Target USA.
This conflict has been described as a war between Israel and Hamas. However,
if we look at the civilian death toll,
Fadi Mansour, Pentagon correspondent for Al Jazeera Arabic, says those numbers tell you something.
When you're talking about 8,300 killed so far, when CPJ says this last 3 weeks have been the deadliest for journalists covering the conflict since 1992. This is a war that's going beyond Hamas.
What he's saying plainly and simply is this.
Every corner in Gaza is being bombed. This is going way beyond just, you know, war between Israel and Hamas.
Coming up on this episode, from WTOP in Washington, D.C., this is Target USA. America has a target on its back, and on this program, we investigate the threats, the people behind them, the agencies fighting them, and the impact on you. This is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
I'm J.J. Green. We're talking with my colleague, Fadi Mansour. He is the Pentagon correspondent for Al Jazeera Arabic. And we're talking in part about our colleague, Wael Dodo, whose family was killed while he was broadcasting, and about the broader implications of this war. First, about Wael.
So, JJ, Wael is Al Jazeera Arabic bureau chief in Gaza, and he's been covering Gaza for many, many years for Al Jazeera, so including all the wars that happened in the last 20 years in Gaza. During this war and after Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu asked the civilian population of North Gaza to move south, Wael was covering from Gaza City, which is a very dangerous place. And he is probably the last correspondent from an international media outlet that's still, or a wire service that is still covering on air from Gaza City. He had to choose whether to keep his family with him in the city where it's not safe, or ask them to make sure they move south where he thought they're going to be in a safe place. So they moved to a relative's house in Al-Nusayrat refugee camp, which is south of Gaza Valley or Wadi Gaza. This is the line that separates North Gaza from South Gaza. Where they were supposed to move based on what the Israeli government and military told them to do. However, they were where they were sheltering, that house was targeted. 14 members of his extended family were killed, including his wife, his daughter, his son, and his grandson. People in Gaza now say there's no safe place in Gaza, because although they followed directions from the Israeli military, they moved south. Many Palestinians are still being killed in South Gaza. And just to put it, you know, it's not only the civilians. The situation is so grave that the UN just yesterday mourned the death of 59 of its staffers in Gaza. That's a staggering number on top of all the civilians. Where are we now? People, you know, I'm not able to keep track of how many civilians have been killed so far. Are we at 8,300 now? More than, 3,400 children? And it keeps on growing. And it's unbelievable, you know, in terms of journalists, CPJ, they believe, based on what they were able to verify, in the first 3 weeks, 24 Palestinian journalists were killed. You know, Al Jazeera thinks that this type of indiscriminate targeting of Gaza civilian infrastructure will eventually lead to death, not only journalists, their families. Many journalists lost their families. So it's real. The situation is really dire. When we talk from here, it sounds like statistics, but people who are on the ground, journalists you talk to, UN staffers, they describe the situation as a living hell.
Sadie, you're exactly right about all of that. And the real concern is for the helpless, the harmless, and in some cases, the hopeless and the helpless people. And in some cases, you know, we just don't seem to be able to predict where this is going to go. You are very familiar with this conflict between Israel and Hamas. Give us your view on where this stands now. I mean, maybe a bit of background on where it came from, but where it stands now, because have you ever seen it worse?
JJ, when you know, when we describe this as a conflict between Israel and Hamas, if we look at the civilian death toll, when you're talking about 8,300 killed so far, when CPJ says this last 3 weeks have been the deadliest for journalists covering the conflict since 1992, when CPJ, which is the Committee to Protect Journalists, have been, you know, tracking the numbers. This is a war that's going beyond Hamas. You know, what's been targeted, 50% or more of residents in Gaza destroyed or damaged. This is like civilian units. When hospitals are being targeted, UN schools where people go to take refuge, you know, every corner in Gaza is being bombed. This is going way beyond just, you know, war between Israel and Hamas. So it is important to clarify this thing. The roots of this conflict is in many ways, it's the history of occupation and displacement and ethnic cleansing and administrative and military oppression. I mean, if you don't want to look at Gaza, look at what's happening in the West Bank, right? This is an area that is supposed to be ruled by the Palestinian Authority, where people are facing daily settlers, Israeli settlers' violence. People are rounded up and put in prison by, you know, and it drives off like tens and hundreds. Up until September 19, right before this latest round of war, almost 230 Palestinians were killed, both in the West Bank and Gaza. So this situation has been going on for decades. However, we pay attention when the toll becomes so big. But in the last rounds since Hamas took control of the Gaza Strip, we haven't seen something at this scale, obviously. October 7 was exceptional for many people on both sides. But since then, the way Israel went about its war, that is not only alarming, you know, Palestinians because they are on the receiving end, but even the American administration. Now you see more and more in the statements, whether from the phone calls between President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu, whether from the DOD, the State Department, there's more emphasis on the human side of this issue and the way the Israeli forces should be conducting this war. So there is a lot of concern. But at the end of the day, for many, what started this whole situation is basically shutting down all avenues of peace, getting to a situation where two people can live side by side with security and equal opportunities. However, if you talk to Palestinians now, if you talk to people who have been following the situation, there is no room anymore for an independent Palestinian state because the land for that state does not exist anymore because of the expanding settlement activity that's been happening under every American administration. And this is the situation. So you're not able to carry on with that project that started with Oslo for an independent Palestinian state. You're not able to live a normal life. And more than 2 million people, 2.3 million people, live in what is being described as an open concentration camp, the biggest in the world. You know, they're under siege from the air, from the sea, from the land, and they have no way to go. So if you put pressure on people for so long, something is going to happen. And every American administration, especially this one, thought they can, you know, just deal with the situation in terms of management. However, the occupation by its nature, it generates crisis. This is what oppression and occupation does. And in the U.S., here we hear young people, when they protest events, when civilians are harmed, no justice, no peace. I mean, this is not only a slogan. This is the human history.
You make a very good point. This is no longer a situation that we can call an Israel-Hamas situation. This is way beyond that, and you've explained that very eloquently. One of the things I want to ask you about as we continue to dig into this a little bit was about you as a journalist and you and your colleagues continuing to do your work objectively. I know this has got to be hard because of what took place, but you're a professional and you're one of the best that's out there. And I know that from years of watching and experience. But give us a sense of how difficult it is right now to do that because of what you're seeing and what you know and what's taking place.
JJ, I guess you're alluding to the fact that many of my colleagues with Al Jazeera Arabic in the U.S. have roots in the region. We have relatives, people, friends who have been affected. I've been affected, on a personal level. Just at the beginning of this new round of war, I lost my dear friend, Issam Abdullah. He was a photographer for Reuters. He was targeted while he was doing his job in South Lebanon just recently. He was killed in attack, but what Lebanese security are saying was Apache helicopter strike, two consecutive strikes within 30 seconds, although he was with a group of journalists in an open area, away from the line of fire, with Al Jazeera crew as well, with AFP, with other local media. They were all marked in press, whether the bulletproof vest, helmets, Al Jazeera car, the SUV was marked with press, and yet they were targeted by two missiles.
Let me interrupt very quickly. One quick question. Do you believe we're in a time now when people knowingly, deliberately ignore journalists that are covering war?
I think so, because when CPJ, the Committee to Protect for Protection of Journalists, say that the last 3 weeks were the deadliest for journalists since 1992, that's not a coincidence. When Israeli authorities get in touch with media outlets and say we cannot guarantee the safety of your crews, that's a clear messaging that, you know, you cannot operate in that zone because of the type of strikes Israel is launching. Al Jazeera described it as indiscriminate. So as I said, it is personal because I lost people. My friend, Carmen Jo Khadar, Al Jazeera correspondent in South Lebanon, was injured in that attack. My dear friend, photographer for Al Jazeera, Eli Brachia, has been injured. He needs at least a year to recover and many surgeries. And we don't know if he's going to be able to go back and work as a photographer again. The career that he built over the years, he covered so many wars. So it is personal. But at the same time, JJ, I believe any journalist who's been trying to cover this story, it's been so difficult. How do you wrap your mind around such numbers in such a short period of time? More than 8,000 civilians killed. And you look at the situation, the humanitarian situation, the daily suffering, shutting down of electricity, cutting off the strip from the outside world, no fuel, no food, a couple of days ago, no communication. This is beyond anything we have seen so far in recent conflicts. This is so brutal that it you don't have to be from the region to kind of struggle with the situation. But as you said, because of that emotional contact, because you know people on the ground, it is difficult. But at the end of the day, every journalist has to make a choice. Being professional is being able to ask the right question, get the right piece of information, and being able to cover a conflict based on facts, because that's what gets the people to understand the real situation on the ground, you know? Although we have so much disinformation, so it is up to us, the professionals, to be able to still do our job, maintain credibility, because if we think we have a duty toward the people who are suffering, we have to maintain our credibility at the end of the day to tell the truth, you know?
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
So, Faithy, I want to ask this question, but I want to ask this in the right context, and I don't want this to seem as though I'm just sort of writing this situation off as, you know, it's never going to change. But I want to ask this question for you to understand and everyone that's listening, that there are many people out there that are hoping that things will change, that somehow along the way, people will listen and understand that what's taking place for the Palestinian people is just horrific, and it's difficult to see a light at the end of the tunnel. But I want to ask the question, though, do you get the sense from talking to people that there is hope right now that this will change?
I don't think this question is on people's mind, because when you're at the receiving end of a bomb, you're not thinking about peace. You're thinking about survival. And when you've seen this happening so many times in the last 16 or 17 years, and it's getting worse every year, you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And when you see governments that support Israel, and we're supposed to be supporting this peace process, trying to kind of sidestep it and look at other issues, how to just integrate Israel in the region, regardless of the issues that are creating all these conflicts, mainly in the Palestinian territory, there's no real hope. And when you see the support for the war from the U.S. government, although the Biden administration says it's not involved, but it is hard to in the war. But it's hard to see how that makes sense when you're sending weapons, money, political support, voting against resolutions in the UN for ceasefire. It's hard to see how the U.S. government, my government, is not involved. So at this moment, I don't think many people see hope, because what we're seeing is the opposite of hope. West Bank is not involved in the war in Gaza. However, look at how many people lost their lives from the Palestinian side since the beginning of the war. How many attacks by settlers? I mean, people are being armed, and settlers in Israel on TV. And these settlers are attacking, pushing small villages, communities to leave their villages as we're speaking now, what many people call the second Nakba or ethnic cleansing. So you tell me, how are Palestinians supposed to see hope? or the people in the region supposed to see hope? Like a friend of mine just tweeted, he's a journalist from Lebanon. Every time a younger generation looks at the history and kind of not necessarily focused on the Palestinian issue, Israel remind that generation of the Palestinian issue, referring to the war and to the impact of that war on the civilian population in Palestine.
So, yeah, you said settlers are taking up arms. Well, they're already armed, and this is a pattern anyway. But I heard you say that the Israelis have been arming, the government has been arming them. I have also heard, too, that the military has been giving these settlers more weapons. I'm wondering, do you know if these weapons are military-type weapons that they're giving them? I know it doesn't matter, because they're using them to kill Palestinians and hurt Palestinians. I understand that, but I'm just trying to get a sense of what kind of weaponry they're getting from the military at this point.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I meant. They're giving them more weapons, but it's being televised. You know, it's sending a message to the Palestinian population. You're trying to strike fear in the hearts of Palestinians, because at the end of the day, at the heart of this occupation is the settlements and settlers. You displace Palestinians, settlers move in, which is against the international law, and they become the new reality. And Israel expands, and any land for Palestine shrinks. But as you said, it is military type. It's not the first time they are, you know, armed. Israel, at the end of the day, you know, it's a society that every young man and woman are required to, you know, serve in the military and fight in the military. So it's common for the settlers to have military grade weapons. And not only that, some of the attacks on Palestinians are happening while the Israeli military, which is the occupation in West Bank, is just, you know, standing on the side and just watching and letting this happen. And we saw something like that happening in an incident 2 weeks ago that was caught on camera.
Can you give me a little bit of your personal situation right now? And you're, like I said before, you're the consummate professional, having served in war zones, but having lived in war zones and having family in this one, and friends, and losing friends and family in this one. What's going on inside of you at this point, inside of your head?
You know, JJ, I'm no stranger to wars. As you said, I last year I covered the war in Ukraine in different locations and up to the, you know, front line between Kherson and Mykolaiv. I lived in a war zone my entire youth up until I left my, you know, country where I was born, Lebanon. I still remember the Israeli invasion of 1982. I remember the war of 1993. I remember the war of 1996. I remember when Israel pulled out of most of Lebanese territory in 2000. I remember 2006, although I was, you know, watching from here. But it is very difficult. There's a sense that this war, if it continues on this path in Gaza, might expand, get out of hand, and might involve other fronts. Mainly, we're talking about Lebanon, where my family lives. But I had to make tough choices as well. I know this catastrophic war is still at the phase that it can actually even get even worse. And by saying worse, it can become regional. And that's why I made the tough choice to kind of ask my mom to leave Lebanon and go stay with my brother who lives outside Lebanon, because we fear for the situation. It's really tough to be doing this job and talking to officials in the American administration and talking to many people and having this kind of a very rare opportunity to look at how the decisions are being made and separate yourself from what you're seeing on TV daily. The amount of suffering, it's almost like if Hollywood goes and produces a movie and puts this on screen, people will not be able to go to the movies and watch it. It's so gruesome, it's so brutal that it gives you nightmares. And at the same time, you're trying to keep your emotions in check. You're trying to do your job and keep asking the question, why? But at the same time, JJ, look around you. Look at the young American generation. Look at what's happening on the streets. Look at the protest. Look at the many organizations that have a Jewish roots and they're proud of their identity, how they're opposing this war. This country has certain political dynamics where the people will always be able to voice their concerns and at the same time maybe affect decisions in the future. So in many ways, we are privileged because we are here, but the war is following us. You almost can smell the blood that is being spilled in Gaza every day.
Faye, is there anything else you want to add before we go that I haven't asked you about that you think is important?
JJ, I think, you know, I moved to the U.S. in 2004. Palestine wasn't even a consideration. And although many people complain about how main media outlets are covering this war, many people maintain that the Palestinians are being dehumanized. Their story isn't being told. However, at this age and time, because of social media, because every person basically can report on a situation if they have a phone, you can't hide the reality anymore. And I think Americans are more and more exposed to the situation and what's been happening. And some of these things have been empowered by their own government, my government, your government. And I think people are becoming more and more aware. So there is a shift there. I just hope that this show of solidarity with the Palestinians, I just hope that all this suffering, the outcome will be for a better future. Can you think about a situation when this war ends where people are just going to be able to go to their homes and continue their lives as usual? Their homes do not exist anymore. So something has to happen. And it has to happen in a way that gives justice to the Palestinians. Because without justice, this cycle of war is not going to end.
That's Fadi Mansour. He's the Washington correspondent for Al Jazeera Arabic, and he covers the Pentagon.
That's it for this episode of Target USA. Coming up in our next episode.
It was pretty chaotic at the beginning. We enlisted on the 24th, and the next day we were placed on the eastern outskirts of the capital.
We talk with Igor, who's been fighting on the front lines in Ukraine. That's right, that other war that's going on.
Because the Russians were closing in both from the north and the east, giving nothing but rifles, making our cocktail molotovs.
That's coming up on the next episode of Target USA. In the meantime, if you have any questions or comments about the program, send me an email. You can reach me at jgreen@wtop.com. The letter J, the color green, one word, at Whiskey Tango Oscar Papa. jgreen@wtop.com. Also, please subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter. We're at TUSA Podcast. That's at Tango Uniform Sierra Alpha Podcast. And if you want more national security news, you can sign up for my newsletter. It's called Inside the Skiff, and you can sign up at WTOP.com/email.
I'm JJ Green, and this is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.